The scripture reading today is from the Quran. It's surah number 23. There's 118 verses, but I'm only going to read 10 of them for you. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Happy now the believers who humble themselves in prayer and who keep themselves aloof from vain words and who are doers of alms deeds and who restrain their appetites and who tend well their trusts and covenants, who keep themselves strictly to their prayers. These shall be the heritors who shall inherit the paradise to abide in forever.
Peace be upon you. And you say, peace be upon you also. I'll try it again. Peace be upon you.
Peace be upon you also.
Fantastic. There is no God but God. Muhammad is the messenger of God. That statement is the first of the five major beliefs of the Islamic religion. It sounds a lot like the first two of the Ten Commandments that Moses received from God. I am the Lord your God, and you shall have no other gods before me. Moses was a follower of the one God of Abraham. Abraham, perhaps in the year 2000 BC or so, had heard the voice of God. And God said to Abraham, go forth from your land and your birthplace and your father's house to the land I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great. Abraham followed the word of God, eventually ending up in this promised land. Christians consider Abraham to be the first of the patriarchs, and so do the Jews consider Abraham to be the first of the patriarchs, and so do the Muslims consider Abraham to be the first of the patriarchs. Abraham, the patriarch, or the father, or the founder of the three great monotheistic religions of today's world. The Jews, the Christians, the Muslims, all believe in the one God of Abraham. And it is always the same God, though with different names. The Jews call God Yahweh. Though God was so sacred, God's name is not supposed to be spoken out loud. In the Hebrew Bible, God is also called Elohim. American Christians call God, God. That is our English word for God. The Spanish call God Dios. The French call God Dieu. The Muslims call God Allah. Lots of names for the one and only God. So how did Abraham manage to be the founder of three religions? According to the Bible, Abraham and his wife Sarah were well into their older years and they were childless. Abraham fathered a child with a slave girl Hagar, a boy called Ishmael. Not long after that, the elderly Sarah had a child, Isaac. In the Bible, Genesis 21, Sarah grew jealous of Hagar and the firstborn son, Ishmael. They are cast out into the wilderness to get along, or not, as best they can. The future didn't look bright, though in the Bible, God promises to make a great nation of Ishmael. The boy Isaac is the apple of Abraham's eye. God tells Abraham he must make a sacrifice of Isaac, and Abraham prepares to do so. Abraham and Isaac go to a high place, Mount Moriah. As we all know, Isaac is not killed. However, the spot of the intended sacrifice becomes a holy place. This is the place where the Temple Mount will be built, the place where Jesus taught, and the place where in 691 AD, the Muslims erected the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem, which exists in the same place to this day. Isaac survived and went on to father Jacob, who in turn fathered the 12 tribes of Israel, including Judah, whose descendants included King David and Jesus of Nazareth. Meanwhile, back in the wilderness, according to the Quran, Hagar and her son Ishmael are struggling for survival. Hagar searches frantically for water, running back and forth between two mountains or hills called Sofa and Marwa. The angel Gabriel creates a spring, and the water flows to this day, about 20 miles outside Mecca. Then Abraham comes to help them. In the Quran, it is Ishmael who is supposed to be sacrificed. Once again, Abraham prepares, and as in the Genesis story, once again, he is prevented by God from following through. The site of this proposed sacrifice was Mecca, a city in Saudi Arabia, now the holiest city for Muslims. So we have two sacrifice of sons stories. In the Bible, one about Isaac. In the Quran, one about Ishmael. Isaac, the father of the Israelites. Ishmael, the father of the Arabs. Now a fast forward to 620 AD, or as we say these days, CE, which is Common Era. There is a man, Mohammed. He is a merchant and a good, honest, upright, regular citizen. He lives in Mecca, a thriving trade center, thriving in part because it is the home of the Kaaba. Kaaba just means cube. The Kaaba is a building made of granite and marble, close to 50 feet long, 50 feet wide, and 50 feet tall. I was going to measure this sanctuary, but I think it's about this size, maybe. In Mohammed's time, the Kaaba housed 360 pagan idols, and people came to Mecca and to the Kaaba to worship these 360 pagan idols. And while they were there, they traded at the marketplaces, which was very good for trade and the economy of that place. At the time of Mohammed, the Kaaba was already ancient. The story goes that Abraham and Ishmael had built it, or maybe Adam built it, and it was repaired and restored by Abraham and Ishmael. Mohammed used to go to a cave in a mountain that wasn't too far away. He prayed and he meditated. One day he was surprised to hear a voice say, "Read." He was told more than once to read. And although he was a successful merchant, he had to respond that he didn't know how to read or write. He was then told to recite. Mohammed's friends and relatives wrote down what he recited, and so began a 23-year revelation of how to live instructions that became the Quran. The Quran and the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, are both books about how to live. In Deuteronomy, in the Old Bible, there are 613 Jewish rules of what to eat, what to wear, whether you can work on the Sabbath, purity rules. The New Testament, our Christian Bible, focuses much more on what to believe than it does on what you must actually do in a day-to-day way. However, the first rule, or pillar of wisdom, of the Muslim faith is a rule of what to believe. And there are five pillars of faith for the Muslims. The first of the five pillars of faith is, there is no God but God, and Muhammad is the messenger of God. All that is necessary to become a Muslim is to say and believe this phrase, there is no God but God, and Muhammad is the messenger of God. We wouldn't have any trouble with the no God but God, but maybe a little trouble with believing Muhammad is actually the messenger of God. The second pillar is prayer. Muslims believe it is necessary to pray five times a day. They pray at dawn, early afternoon, late afternoon, sunset, and evening. When they pray, they face Mecca. Muslim homes have a little niche in the wall, often indicating the direction of Mecca. In Muslim countries, hotel rooms often have something that indicates the direction of Mecca. And prayer rugs may even have a tiny compass built into the rug, corner of the rug, to show which directions are which. And prayer rugs are not holy objects in the way that a Catholic rosary is. It's meant to create a clean space for kneeling and going through the ritual motions of the prayers. They're going to pray five times a day. They're not going to be doing it just anywhere, so they have their prayer rugs. A folded sheet would serve their purposes just as well. There's nothing that special about prayer rugs, but they all have them. There are no priests or ministers in Islam. The prayers are led by an imam, a person without special credentials, or he could have special credentials and be a great scholar. The imams, the leaders of the prayers, are men, though, like the Catholic Church and women becoming priests, the imams may someday be women. At present, women may lead prayers of women, but not in mixed groups. Women cover their hair while praying. Men may wear caps. This is done as a sign of respect. While praying may be done anywhere, Friday afternoon prayers are often done in a group at a local mosque. Men and women are usually separated during prayers, and the minarets, those high towers, so familiar when we think of Muslim architecture, are towers where the muezzin go to call the faithful to prayer. And we've all seen that in the movies where you hear the voices echoing through the city. The third pillar of Islam is fasting. Fasting is a huge undertaking. It lasts for a month. There is no eating, no drinking, and no marital relations from dawn until sunset. This takes place during the month of Ramadan. And since Ramadan is set according to a lunar calendar, as is our celebration of Easter, it shifts 10 or 11 days earlier every year. So sometimes Ramadan may be in summer and sometimes in winter and other times in between. The children, ill, pregnant women, women nursing babies, the elderly, those people who are traveling, are exempted from this fast. So you don't have to do it no matter what. Islam also has dietary laws which must be observed at all time. There is no pork, and pork can be found in the funniest places. For example, marshmallows are made with gelatin, and the gelatin often comes from pig bones, hence marshmallows are forbidden food. Alcohol is forbidden at all times. And you may remember after the 9/11 incident, when the identity of the suicide bombers was known, it was discovered they had been going to their local bars and drinking alcohol, something strictly forbidden by their religion, which, by the way, also strictly forbids suicide. The fourth pillar of Islam, pilgrimage. A Muslim must make a pilgrimage to Mecca once in his or her lifetime if it can be done without hardship. The pilgrimage is called the Hajj, which means journey or pilgrimage. The Hajj always takes place 2 months after the end of Ramadan and may last up to 7 days. So that's another thing that's going to keep moving around our calendar because it follows the lunar calendar. There are 1.4 billion Muslims in the world. 1.4 billion Muslims in the world. About 2 billion Christians in the world. Last year, 3.5 million people came to Mecca at the time of the Hajj. 3.5 million pilgrims. Since Mecca is located in Saudi Arabia, the Saudi government is in charge of this enormous influx of pilgrims. The numbers of necessity must be limited because there are so many Muslims who want to visit the holy cities of Mecca and also Medina. Non-Muslims are not allowed to come as tourists. Participating in the Hajj means wearing simple clothing, white sheets or white coverings for men, modest coverings for women, but the women are not to cover their faces. At the time of the Hajj, men, women, all races, all colors are together. There's a format for the Hajj: walking around the Kaaba 7 times, one direction, running between those two hills, Safa and Marfa, to commemorate Hagar's running back and forth looking for water. And the pilgrims throw stones, I think they must be provided with these stones, but they're actually just pebbles these days, at a wall or some pillars that represent Satan, because when Abraham and Ishmael were there, they had to throw stones at the devil to drive him away. The fifth pillar of Islam is charity. Charity is of great importance in the Islamic faith. It started in the time of Muhammad when there was a great need to look after widows, orphans, those who could not look after themselves. Adult Muslims are required to donate to charity. This is what it takes to be a Muslim, a believer in Islam, to believe in the one God, to pray, to fast, to make a pilgrimage to a holy place, and to donate to charity. So I wonder then, who are the people who fight holy wars? Who are the jihadists? And why do they hate us? I have to realize I live in a Cadillac, Michigan protective bubble. I never gave a thought to Muslims or Mohammed 30 years ago. I'm ignorant of history. The television keeps me confused. Who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? Back in 1981, Iran released 52 Americans who they had kept captive for 444 days. At that time, Iran and Iraq were at war with each other. Saddam Hussein was the leader of Iraq, and the United States provided support for Hussein in Iraq in his fight against Iran. Later, of course, we didn't like Saddam Hussein anymore. Then we imposed sanctions on Iraq, which didn't hurt Hussein, but affected hundreds of the children of Iraq. Osama bin Laden became our public enemy number one. But that wasn't the case when he was fighting the Russians in Afghanistan back in the 80s, when we provided arms and help and CIA support for that effort. Today, I wonder if I should be rooting for the Muslim for the military or the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And I don't have a clue. As for history, because of political warfare, because of their political warfare, not their holy warfare, the Muslims had expanded their influence from the tiny little area of Mecca and Medina back in the 600s, and they'd gone to encompass lands that stretched from the border of India to include all of Spain. The Muslim influence went from China and India, the edges of India and China, all the way to Spain. Huge. They collected taxes, and then they let the conquered countries follow whatever religion they wanted. The Crusaders, in their own time, were not so tolerant. After the Crusades came the Inquisition, another time of Christian intolerance of other religions. The Crusades began in 1077, just shortly after 1077. The Inquisition was in the 1500s. Why should anyone care about that anymore? Because people have long memories. We are a very new country, and we celebrate our memories already with the 4th of July, and we certainly remember December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day. But the Muslims have grievances of a more recent nature. In the era of colonization, Muslim countries were taken over by Europeans. The French in North, West, and Equatorial Africa, and in Lebanon and Syria. The British took over Palestine, Jordan, Iraq, the Arabian Gulf, and the Indian subcontinent. And they were also, the British were also in Southeast Asia. They were in Malaysia, Singapore, and Brunei. I remember from school the old saying that the sun never sets on the British Empire. But their empire was taking over other people's lands. And the Dutch were in Indonesia. World War I and World War II contributed to the Muslims' problems when the winners of the wars carved up the Middle East into countries where no countries had existed before. The British divided the Indian subcontinent into India and Pakistan. Kashmir, which we still hear about, had a Muslim majority, and it probably should have been a part of Pakistan because Pakistan was for the Muslims. Instead, it's ruled by India, and those folks are mostly Hindus. Problems. The French created Lebanon by taking some portions of Syria, and Britain set the borders and the rulers for Iraq and Kuwait. Jordan was a creation of Britain. Boundaries now exist without consideration of the ethnic and religious orientations of those resident peoples. In 1953, during Eisenhower's administration, our CIA backed a coup in Iran that put Shah Pahlavi in as head of state in Iran. The Shah was a secular, that is worldly, not religious, but corrupt leader, which paved the way for the coming in of Ayatollah Khomeini and the people's desire to return to a more religious influence. And problem of problems. The 1948 decision of the United Nations to partition Palestine, giving part to the Jews. A continuing complaint of the Muslim nations is the support provided to Israel by the United States. While Europe was mired in the Dark Ages, Muslims had a flourishing culture of medicine, mathematics, architecture, immense libraries, and a religion that focused on God and living a good life. That doesn't mean to say that the Muslims were always peaceful. Islam teaches that there should be no wars of aggression, but politics and religion are not the same thing, not even for Muslims. Wars were never to be undertaken to spread the faith. However, wars of defense were permitted. The Quran teaches that wars of defense are permitted. And there are those in the Muslim world who believe they have been attacked and have a right to defend themselves. The Crusades, the Inquisition, colonialism, partition of their lands, giving Palestinian-owned land to Jews, and American interference in their politics. Combine the sense of a magnificent but lost culture with hundreds of years of attack that grew exponentially once the West developed an advanced technology. And then things evened out with oil. Oil. With oil, if they couldn't make it, they could buy it. Into this mix, add an emerging to ultra-conservative religious minority. It is this minority that wants to return the faith to the so-called fundamentals. However, in its origins, Islam was a very progressive religion, giving rights to women. War was only for defense. Widows, orphans, elderly were to be looked after. The, quote, fundamentalist view of Islam is not the same as the Islam of Mohammed. There are 1.5 billion Muslims in the world. There are 7 million Muslims in the United States. The ultra-conservatives are a minuscule minority, but they get all the press. In our minds and hearts, we need to separate the fanatical fringe from the everyday God-worshipping Muslims of Islam. Peace be upon you.